Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Well, good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the Stop Child Abuse Now talk radio show sponsored by NASA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Penelope Bennett, and I'm from Bellevue, Washington, and I'm here with my co-host, Kim Lakin, from Colorado this evening, and we wish to welcome you to our show tonight. It is Monday. It is Monday, December 20th, 2021. This is scan number 2816, and the type of show we're having tonight is a special guest night. We have a very special guest with us this evening. Her name is Catherine Barner. She is from Houston, Texas. And before we tell you a little bit more about Catherine, I wanted to talk about NASC and NASC's mission. If you'd like to be a part of the show tonight and join us as a panel member, Kim and I would highly encourage you to do so. No experience necessary. The number to call in is area code 646-595-2118. Again, that's area code 646-595-2118. And Kim will meet you on the back line and ask you where you're from. And then we will put you in listen-only mode, and you will have an opportunity. We break twice during the show to interact with our special guest, Catherine, and ask her a question or have a comment regarding her story. This is her night to share with us her story and her journey and any information she wishes to share. So it is her show this evening. But we do encourage anyone interested in learning about child abuse, trauma prevention, intervention, recovery to call in and be a member of the panel. We have a single purpose at NASCA, and it's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, neglect, and we do so with two goals. The first goal, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood, showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal, we offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So the number to call in to be a member of our panel once more is area code 646-595-2118. I'd like to tell you a little bit more about our special guest tonight. Her name is Catherine Barner. As I mentioned, she is from Houston, Texas. She is a licensed psychotherapist and a grief and trauma expert. She has a website. And on her website, she asks, are you a woman searching for a way to finally heal from childhood sexual abuse? Do you need help moving forward with your life after loss? If so, you're in the right place. Catherine offers many services and is especially committed to serving Black women survivors of childhood sexual abuse, helping them break cycles of silent suffering so they can discover their voice and live in perfect peace. Catherine states, I spent my career helping my clientele pursue and achieve mental, emotional, and spiritual health. She offers counseling and coaching and can participate at events as a keynote speaker or a motivational speaker, MC, and host. Catherine is a creative person. She's penned a workbook that's called The Survivor's Tool, which is available through her website. And I know she's going to tell us the address for her website while she's on the show tonight. And The Survivor's Toolkit is filled with tips you'll need to develop a plan for taking care of yourself as you do the hard work of reclaiming control of your life and discovering a perfect peace. She states, in addition to that, there's a mess for women with history of sexual abuse who have not previously addressed negative effects on their experience. It's also a great resource to accompany treatment for those who are currently working towards healing. Well, I'm very much looking forward to hearing from Catherine on the show. And as you know, when we have a special guest night, if our guest has a personal history of child abuse, and they wish to share it with us, we welcome that. Go through one's life chronologically, starting at the early years, and then working our way up to the present time. It's a 90-minute show that does go by very quickly. So without further ado, Catherine, I'm going to unmute your line so you're unmuted. And on behalf of NASCA and Kim Lincoln and myself, and I'm Penelope, we welcome you this evening, Catherine, and you're on live.
Well, good evening, Penelope and Kim. Thank you so much for having me on the show tonight. I so appreciate the opportunity to be with you all, to share my story, and really just to highlight what you said in the intro, really just to help educate the public about what we all know really is a very serious subject and one that really does need some additional light shown on it so that we can do the hard work, but the necessary work to stop childhood abuse, and in my case, childhood sexual abuse in particular. Excuse me. So again, really, really grateful to be with you guys on the line tonight.
Well, we wish to thank you. And I know that, as a professional, this is your work as well. But I also know through my own experience of, being a childhood survivor of sexual abuse, that every time we tell our story, it's a gift that we give ourselves and we give those that are listening. It takes us back. At least it takes me back to the trauma. So there's a bit of a sacrifice in there, but it is so helpful to so many people that may not be calling in live on the show, but we know we have people who are listening to it and streaming, or that listen to the archive shows that we have on our website. We know that they are used as tools, and so I do wish to thank you, because I always feel like it's such a gift for you to be on here and sharing your own personal story. And with that being said, because we do these shows and they are archived, we try and have them have some consistency in terms of how they're organized. And so if you wouldn't mind, Catherine, just taking us back to your earliest memories in your childhood, and maybe also giving us some context as you begin about, where you were born, who was in your family of origin, maybe what life was like in terms of family that you were born into, so we can kind of paint a picture and kind of visualize your life and as it came from your earliest memories, and then move forward from there.
Awesome. I can certainly do that. I am born and raised in a very small town in Texas, a small town in southeast Texas, of Orange, Texas in particular. It is a little itty-bitty town. It is the last town before you cross the border from Louisiana or from Texas into Louisiana. It's one of those, if you blink, you really will miss it. But grew up there in a family with my older brother and our parents. Mom and dad were both in the home. My mom worked as an educator. She taught school and, was very active in the community. My father was from a large family in the community. He had 11 other siblings. And so when you're from a small town and someone in your family, has an extended larger family, everybody knows you, everybody knows your family. And then by default, because the town is so small, everybody knows everybody anyway. But, you know, but growing up, you know, life was good. You know, I didn't have any cares, didn't really have any worries. You know, my brother and I, you know, laugh and joke now as we look back and we go, yeah, I think we were struggling, but we didn't know because, you know, we were just kids. And as far as we knew, we were just doing what everybody else did. And like I said, our parents worked and took care of us. And, you know, my brother was pretty much my hero. And I spent a lot of time with my grandmother and all that until I was very active in school. And as I said, my mom taught, so that was always a big deal in our home. And, you know, played some sports, not because I was really good at it, but just because it was something to do and try it out, but figured out that I don't really want to sweat a whole lot, so I won't keep doing that. But, you know, up until, you know, life was good until the summer before my freshman year of high school. I was 14 years old at the time. Again, had not really had anything of any significance as far as anything difficult happen in my life. Had not had to really face any challenges of note that I, you know, that were really impactful at that time. But the summer prior to my freshman year of high school is when, you know, the proverbial rails most definitely went off the track and, you know, took the train with it and just kind of crashed and burned. I was sexually abused by a family member. It started out, you know, as an education lesson, as it was termed. What I now know as an adult and as someone who has survived is that was actually grooming what was going on at the time. But those episodes lasted probably about 9 months or so that I can recall, probably three or four very specific instances, of abuse. And so that, like I said, sent me into these two worlds of trying to figure out, okay, what the heck is happening? Like what is this? Because again, I'm used to safety and I'm used to security. I'm used to having fun and I'm used to hanging with my big brother and, you know, all of those things. And all of a sudden I'm in a space where I'm afraid all the time. And I'm in a space where I don't know what to do. I'm in a space where I don't even know how to communicate about this. And so there's this duality that's happening in my head and in my heart, because what am I supposed to do? Again, as you know, as I know now, as a fully functioning adult who's, you know, done a lot of work to heal through this, is that I wasn't supposed to know what to do at 14. None of us do. And so, as I said, the abuse went on for probably about 9-10 months. It did finally stop. But during that time, like I said, I just recall being very afraid, being very vigilant about where I was at any particular time. If I knew that I would be in contact with my family member, if I knew for whatever reason I might be potentially left alone, because I didn't tell anyone right away. And so there was always this dance of how do I protect myself? How do I kind of keep this from happening again, but not yet telling anyone who really could help me? And so then I finally did, after, like I said, those 9 months, probably with another three or four, so it made it a full year after the abuse actually started to when I did finally share that experience with the adults in my life. And I had a plan, you know, as we always do, for, you know, why we wait and why we think it's going to be the best time and how we believe it's all going to work out in our own head. But unfortunately, that didn't happen in my case. My abuser was actually my father. And so I waited at the time. My brother was a senior in high school. My mother was completing a college degree, and so I had a plan as to how this thing was going to play out when I revealed what had been happening. And unfortunately, that is not how it happened. And so that then sent me into what I would call kind of the second, you know, tailspin and the second train coming off the rails. Because it's one thing, as you know, as this has happened to you and you're kind of formulating in your, you know, 14, 15-year-old head as best you can how this is going to work out. And so then you implement that plan, and then it doesn't work out that way. So, mm-hmm. so there's kind of that second wave. And so that went on for probably, another 10 years where I lived in a space of now just really trying to make sense of it all. Obviously, you know, I was very angry. One of the things that I talk about now, particularly when I'm working with women, is that for whatever reason, and I, you know, I hang my hat on my faith and my spirituality, but for whatever reason, God kept me in the same space and time. And like I said, my plan didn't work out, but he allowed me to maintain, as I always say, my sanity in that space and time. He allowed me to find a way to make it through. And for me, that was, you know, delving into schoolwork. I was involved in everything in school. I made all the good grades. I was, you know, in the band and in student government and all the things that I poured myself into because, again, going back to the first part of my story, we were from a very small town. Everybody knew my family, but nobody knew what had happened. And so I learned to wear a really, really well-crafted mask. I learned to do all the things that you do so that no one knows. And so that, as I said, that went on through high school and even as I went into college. It wasn't until my first husband and I were preparing to get married that I really began struggling with, you know, what had happened to me and began experiencing some pretty significant nightmares and really didn't know what was happening. I mean, that was honestly the first time that I had ever received counseling. And so that then led me to begin my journey toward healing that has been a consistent journey but has looked different at different stages of my life and in different parts of the journey. As I think as we heal, we don't always heal the entire part of us. We heal parts at a time, and then we're able to move forward with a little bit more. And so that, you know, that's kind of been my journey. And so the work that I do comes from that place of knowing and having intimately experienced the hurt, the heartache, the shame, the guilt, all of those negative emotions that survivors of abuse experience, particularly when it's happened as a child. And as I said, I have been able to and blessed to be able to, although there were so many difficult years that I went through, I've been able to come out of that in a way that I can now help other women who haven't been able to move through it completely and who still have some very significant difficulties, whether it's relationships or whether it's they still haven't shared it with anyone close to them in their family. Perhaps they haven't told, you know, the husband or their loved one or whomever it may be. And so that's why I do the work that I do. I absolutely love it. I always say it's difficult work, but it's very necessary work. And there is no, as you were mentioning earlier, and thanking me for sharing my story and seeing it as a gift, I see it as a gift to be allowed into someone's world when they are sharing with me what is probably, quite honestly, the darkest part of them, and allowing me to walk with them through that and bring them to help them get to a place where there really can be healing and there really can be wholeness and there really can be some beauty after all of the ugly and the dark and the ashes. And so that is the probably the condensed version of my story, but part of me that brings me to where I am.
No, thank you. And I know I have so many questions. I want to rewind just a little bit. Going on what you just said about, you know, you feel it's a gift when someone that you're working with shares their, and possibly right for the first time, you know, mm-hmm. shares both that they were sexually abused. I know because he's a PhD in psychology, and it's a great combination, he's also an ordained Lutheran priest. So mm-hmm. that was too. But I was under his care for over 2 years before I couldn't even admit it to myself. But I had spoken to myself for the first time because, and this really isn't about me, but a credit to you, he's the first person ever in my life, and I was 40, not too, it was 3-4 years ago. I mean, I was 48 years old, but he was the first person I've ever trusted, completely trusted. And I think you have to completely trust somebody, and you're able to build that trust in your, which is incredible testament to you, in your few patients that you work with, to be able to have for them to have the courage to tell you. But you have to, you build that trust, and that is huge. I think we have to be in a very safe place to tell someone that for the first time.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you.
So I have all these questions coming in my head and comments too before I break to the panel. And I do like to break every 30 minutes because we're a 90-minute show, so we're almost there. But as I'm rewinding now, as I stated, and I'm thinking, my God, my goodness. So 14 years old, it sounds to me like you were in that, maybe where you were in your puberty, but I have heard that, you know, that is not atypical for fathers to become attracted to their daughters during that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you, you know, have ever wondered, you know, what was it that until you were that age, it was the abuse was not remarked. I mean, it was sounds to me like it was, you lived in an adjusted household, and
mm-hmm.
then something, there was that turning point where your father, something happened, and then the grooming began, and then it evolved, obviously, and you did a really good job of explaining how that happened. But I'm just, you know, mine with my own father started 3 years old. So I don't know, I haven't experienced for myself that type of, I guess at the inception of it at that age
mm-hmm.
of you know, a teenager. And I'm just curious, and
right.
you don't have to answer the question that comes to you, but it does pique my interest. And I think this is good information too, right? For those that want to learn, about
mm-hmm.
how this evolve, and signs.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great question that you have and the point that you bring up, because I too have, you know, through my work have heard that, and, you know, from individuals who have worked with, you know, with sexual, those who are sexual abusers, that has been part of it, that as, you know, daughters and sons, for that matter, begin to mature and change and grow, that there does become this, unfortunate, unhealthy, and negative, and, you know, whatever other word we want to put in there to describe how wrong and insidious it is, attraction that occurs. But I think that's actually an excellent question that you bring up. Because, again, as I said, and you're correct, prior to that time, you know, our household was, you know, I mean, it certainly wasn't perfect, but, you know, as I said, I didn't have any cares, any worries, any, you know, life was good. I was just,
mm-hmm.
you know, typical 14-year-old doing what, you know, 14-year-olds do, living life and hanging out with friends and, yeah, all of those things. So so definitely a switch most definitely flipped at that point. And, you know, obviously I'm not sure if the switch had flipped earlier for him, you know what I'm saying, and then it actually manifested itself when the abuse actually started. But it was definitely, like I said, right around that the summer prior to my freshman year of high school. So
as the grooming started happening, mm-hmm. were you, because to me, grooming is such, it's so predatorial, but in a way that is so almost to, at least for me, that it was so benign, right? I didn't realize it was almost, I thought it was normal, I guess, when I say benign. I did not think until I was an adult, you know, in the
right.
current day. Now, about, I don't know, 6 months ago, I realized, you know, how I was groomed, because I always thought that that was normal. And it, you
yeah.
know, that, so I didn't, and it was such, and now I look back, it is predatorial, and it is very, I think, I don't know if it's consciously or subconsciously calculated, but it does evolve. And so I'm just curious as to if you were aware, you know, I don't know if you felt like something was off but couldn't pinpoint it, or if you don't mind, like, or did you
no.
maybe almost reprimand yourself for second guessing it? Does that make sense? Because you carry some of the
no,
shame,
totally,
right?
No, that totally makes sense. And again, an excellent question. And, you know, what I'll say is that it didn't last long at all, you know, it, which is why I think it took me so long to into adulthood, and you know, after having done all the work, you know, that we have to do to heal from these things, it took me so long to even be able to identify it as that, because it mm-hmm. it wasn't, like I said, it didn't take place over a long period of time. It was a relative, like, really short period of time that it occurred, and then the abuse starts. So it was kind of, you know, 1, 2, 3 kind of thing, that, you know, as far as timing goes. So I really didn't have time then to even, you know, to your point, to even stop and think, oh, this is weird, or what is this? Because it was so, the abuse happened so quickly after the initial comments kind of started, and just little things. You know, I refer to them as like little mosquito bites, you know, just kind of something that kind of nips you, and you're like, oh, you know, and you just kind of brush it off and say, oh, you know, what is. And it's not until later that you recognize, oh, crap, you know, wait a minute. That wasn't a mosquito mm-hmm. bite. That was, you know, it was a freaking venomous snake that just, mm-hmm. you know, put his mm-hmm. claws into me. That's what that was. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but again, a great question. I totally understand, because for some people that grooming period is, it's much longer and it's much more protracted. And so when you do look back, you're able to go, you know, okay, this time and this time and this, I could, you know, you can see leading up to it. Mm-hmm. But it was really quick in my case. It was really quick.
Mm-hmm. And my last question before I break the panel, so I'm thinking, okay, mm-hmm. I'm a mother. I don't have daughters. I have 3 sons, but, and they're all a little older now. They're 17, 19, and 20. But, you know, you described, okay, so the abuse started, the sexual abuse started with your father, and you're 14 years mm-hmm. old, and then you really nicely explained, you know, living behind a mask, so living in these two
mm-hmm.
worlds, right? And so I'm thinking, okay, as a mother who, you know, mothers are pretty intuitive, and I'm thinking, you know, I know teenagers, 14, 15, they get, you know, their attitudes change. I get that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you got to think a 14-year-old girl who's carrying this, right, who's mm-hmm. going in your mind, right, is you're just, the energy spent, right, living in just the duress of these two worlds, you know, and all the internal duress is what I'm talking about going on. I'm just wondering, mm-hmm. you know, did your mother suspect, do you think your mother had any idea, even just by your own conduct, right, of just, I'm being
yes.
with this 14-year-old girl under this duress?
Yeah, again, a great question. Here's why I say no. Because when I say I was good at the mask, I did all the quote unquote right things, you know. Mm-hmm. So my response to the abuse initially from the when the abuse started up until the point that I said something about it, my response was I didn't rebel. I didn't I didn't go that route. I turned all my attention to, like I said, you know, school. And you know, I kind of enjoyed school, so it wasn't that big of a deal, but it was an escape. So being involved in these things really just fit who I was. It didn't look like anything necessarily out of the norm, while for me it was a way to not be home. But because I was, quote-unquote, that kid, that student anyway, it didn't seem like, oh, well, she's trying not to be here. Oh, she just wants to be involved in these things. It just, it fit the mold of, you know, who I had been, and honestly kind of the track of who I was going to be, as far as that, if that makes sense. So that's why I would say, and like I said, my behavior, I didn't shift at that point to, you know, not coming home or, you know, running away or some of those things that a lot we know of children who are dealing with childhood sexual abuse do because they're trying to escape. My escape route was just a different way that looked, quote unquote, safer, and no one questioned it.
And that totally makes sense. I'm just wondering, did your father's behavior at all, you know, change in the home, you know, or not? I mean, was he just going around business as usual?
Business,
your mom had,
yeah,
your mother
business
had
as usual.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We just kept chugging along.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for answering my questions. And we've got a lot of support for you this evening on our panel. So I'm bringing in the panel members, if that's all right with you, to go down
certainly.
The panel and have. Okay.
Awesome.
So Kim, my co-host, Kim Lichen from Colorado. Kim, I'm going to invite you to ask Catherine a question or a comment around her story.
Thank you, Penelope. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Kim.
So thank you so much for sharing your story. I know
thank
it's
you.
Not easy sometimes. And especially when you get that deep into, you know, what happened. And sometimes, you know, it affects us different ways. So thank you for being so calm and through this, and let us know if we ever ask a question that doesn't feel comfortable.
I appreciate that.
So I have a lot of similarities with my story and your story, because I was a little bit older too, and it was my stepdad who was with me from the time I was 3. And so it was fascinating to me that Penelope was asking you the questions about, you know, them being in your life from such a young age and then all of a sudden being attracted to you. I've always thought that it was maybe the drugs, because I knew that my dad was on drugs and he was doing heroin at that time as well, from my understanding. And so I thought, you know, it must have something to do with that. As I've done some more, you know, my own therapy and work, and I'm also I'm an independent facilitator for Darkness to Light, Stewards of Children. I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
Mm-hmm.
But since I've been doing that work, I noticed too that there are times that, you know, there are certain types of, I guess, abusers, and some really aren't good to you at that young of an age. It's more of the puberty part that starts to attract them. And then I thinking back to my own story, I know that up until the point with that my dad started abusing me, I was pretty open with questioning about my body. And so mm-hmm. I felt like, you know, thinking about it now, just even with you talking, you know, that maybe that was a little bit of an aha moment for me is, yeah, I did ask questions and stuff. And I wonder if that piqued his interest at some point after that. But I didn't get rebellious at that point either. And it was pretty quick with my dad as well. There were several instances, but it was probably not more than, yeah, a 9-month period.
Mm-hmm.
And but then I got really rebellious when I told my mom a few years later what had happened. And my mom told me that it happens, basically sexual abuse happens to girls.
Yeah.
That was what I got from that. And I went, oh, my gosh. You know, and now looking back at it, I have three grown adults and
mm-hmm.
three grown children, and now I have 5 grandchildren. And,
yeah.
you know, I made that decision when I was 18 years old when I was pregnant with my first daughter, that I wasn't going to just let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to do whatever I needed to do to make sure that my kids are safe. And I've even doubled down now that I have grandchildren. So
yeah.
I'm out there trying to get. So that's a little bit about me, even though I know it's not about me, but
I can relate so much
to your story. And, I don't know that I have any specific questions. I mean, I just appreciate you sharing, and I am going to look you up on Facebook, and hopefully I can get to know you a little bit better. You're on Facebook, correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. Okay.
I would love that.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you for all that you do as well, and I look forward to hearing more about your toolkit that you talk about and the Survivor's Toolkit. I look forward to hearing about that.
All right.
Well, thank you, Kim.
Do you have anything
thank you.
You want to? Yeah. Okay.
And, you know,
you're welcome.
It's like not every day where we can have a conversation, right, and be like, oh, yeah, you know, I can totally relate because that happened to me, too. We don't normally talk about this with our, you know, the people we meet in the grocery store, you know, our friends our colleagues. And but we, you know, that's the beauty of I think, you know, the platform that we have here to talk about these things. And you know, on the panel, we, as you know, we understand because we've walked in those shoes, and our stories might be slightly different, but our feelings are a lot of the times very similar or aligned. So,
I completely agree with that. It's so interesting you say that there is a there's a safety and a beauty, and because no one, again, even though the specifics of our stories may be very, very different, but there's an underlying thread that no one knows like we know. And so being able to share it and in some ways not have to explain the nuances of it, because you just get it because you've been there in some way, shape, or form. I agree with you. It can be very healing and is very freeing oftentimes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you. Yes. And speaking of beauty, so I'm very excited on our panel tonight is my NASCA, our NASCA sister, Nancy Brown, and also a Virginia ambassador. So I am going to unmute Nancy's microphone and bring Nancy on this evening. Good evening, Nancy. It's Penelope, and you're on with Catherine.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you guys for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you all. Thank you, Penelope, for that beautiful introduction. Ms. Catherine, I did come in a little bit late. I do apologize, but I did get a chance to tune in to some parts, and one thing that I did want to say was, you know, we're all from different cities. We're all from different states, different countries, different parts of the world, but these stories do connect us. There's a lot of similarities, and the same spirit is present, right? And we were so young and so vulnerable and so impressed, you know, just the whole picture of it, the whole scenario of it. So I did have a question for you regarding, like, where did you find your strength to be so open with your story and not to even say who the person was, right? So some of us are still struggling with that.
Mm-hmm. So.
I have, like, probably two other questions, but that's one. That's the main one right now.
So I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, Nancy. Tonight is actually the very first time that I have ever said that it was my father.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to tonight, as I've shared my story, and if you recall when I started, I said it was a family member, a close family member. That has always been how I have talked about my story. And it's, part of it has been because as I've grown and as I've done my work and done my healing work, I've gone through different phases of, depending upon the audience, not wanting, wanting it to be so much about the who did it, but more about how did I get through it. But what I also came to realize is that because it was my father, because I remained in relationship with my father until he died in 2009, I remained in the house with my father until I graduated high school, went off to college, and my parents stayed together until my father died and then my mother died. So I had to come to understand that that is a significant part of the story, and it's hard to fully communicate all that I went through, my healing journey, and as I said, even my spiritual growth, all that God was able to do without sharing that part. Honest, tonight is the first time that I have said that it was my father.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that with us. I know the person who abused me is alive. So for me, I struggle with it, but I know depending on the groups, like you said, I just talk and whatever. But it's something that, I mean, it takes so much to be able to get to that place. So I know you're doing a lot of healing work and God's definitely working on you and, you know, being around other people. You sharing that part of your story is like a very, very pivotal part of your story. It's a very important part of your story, especially for parents who have daughters right now around that age group that are dealing with that, right? Especially with the suicide rate going up. So you sharing that part of that story is so powerful and so important because people need to hear how. After that, that's a big hit. So I just want to just tell you, like, you're doing an amazing job and just keep sharing your story. Because for those who can't speak up, those that are still struggling to speak up, you're their voice. You're speaking up for everyone who can't speak up. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Nancy.
With the elders, you're welcome. With the elders, I'm not going to take up too much time because I know you have more for your story, but the elders in our families and our communities, again, different cultures, different countries, right, when we speak about that. We're taught, women a lot of times are taught, you're to be seen and not heard. Okay? So when these things happen, you're not supposed to talk about it because it's like, so what, like, it's just, it happened, get over it and keep going and keep moving. You just got to be a strong woman and just keep moving. But in this new season, we're focused on our healing. We're focused on our voices being heard and also saving lives. So you sharing your story and just changing that whole, the way that they had us not to speak up, keep speaking up. And you're not just speaking up for yourself. You're speaking for a lot of us. So God bless you, and I'm not going to hold you up too long. I'll wait for the next turn.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nancy. Those are some great questions. So let's put you back in listen-only mode. And we, on our power, the last of our power panel is Roberta from Oklahoma, our NASCA sister Roberta. And so, Roberta, you are on live with Catherine. And do you have a question or a comment regarding Catherine's story?
Well, hello, Catherine. I'm Roberta. I'm in Oklahoma. And I was just thinking about what you said about how you get the opportunity or the gift of being able to walk people through the darkness, you know, and be there for them. And, you know, I'm just now kind of like started my healing journey in 2019, really, because I'm almost 60 years old, and I can't remember a day where I haven't been abused in some kind of form, you know, physically, sexually, or verbally, or psychologically, or whatever. And, you know, it's really hard because you know, but I just want to find someone that would walk through the darkness with me because I really am scared, you know, I am scared. And, you know, I got memory blocks and it goes way back, you know, and, plus I had some, I was in some accidents and got really injured too. And so, anyway, I just wanted to thank you for sharing, and I am grateful to know that I know someone will come along and walk through this with me, because it is hurting me because I'm still grieving in my spirit and in my heart, and it causes a lot of pressure and gives me headaches, and, you know, I'm still suffering, you know, physically from, you know, I'm still afraid of my abusers, some of them, and I still am in contact with some of them, and I don't want to be in contact with them. Yeah. And so things like that, you know.
Well, thank you, Roberta. I thank you. Oh, I'm sorry, Catherine.
Go right ahead. I was just going to say thank you. No, I was just going to say thank you. Thank you so much, for Roberta, for sharing that. And I completely understand everything that you're saying. And I'm just grateful that you were on the line and able to listen in tonight. And God bless you. Go ahead. I'm sorry
I
jumped in.
No, thank you. Thank you, Roberta, and thank you for calling in. And I think that's, you know, a great, great that you did call, Roberta, because I really feel like with what Catherine has to share in, you know, in the next segment and the rest of the show, especially with the Survivor's Toolkit, I'm really looking forward to that piece because that's going to be really helpful. And I think that healing is a journey. And, you know, there's no destiny for, at least for me, there's no destination. I think healing is a journey. And I think that we're all at different points. We can, in our journeys, and they, you know, some have mountains and some have hills and sometimes it's flat, but we're always going at a certain speed. And I think I'm really looking forward to hearing about the toolkit. To me, that's just the part that's the hope, right? The hope of moving forward and knowing that it's not, you know, there are dark days and there are lighter days and they're not all the same, but that there are some lighter days as a survivor of a sexual child abuse. So thank you, Roberta, for coming on and listening. And I think it's going to be a great show for all of us to listen to, and we can learn a lot as well. What I wanted to say, though, is now at the top of the second segment, and believe it or not, we're already over halfway done with the show. The time just really does fly by. I actually just want to tell you, Catherine, that when you said it was the first time that publicly on the air, you know, you've shared that your abuser was your father, I want to tell you that I got chills all over my body and tears in my eyes because I what a big step that was, if that's okay for me to call it that. And for me, the feeling that I had, such a feeling of trepidation the first time that I was actually able to publicly, I was frightened to say that it was my father. I don't know. So I feel like I can relate to some of that because I've had the same experience. And I don't know. I felt like I walked with you in that. I can really understand. I just wish to thank you for sharing it with us. It's just a huge gift. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, and thank you. And I, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, as I said, because of the dynamic of my family and, you know, the small town and everyone knew, you know, all the things, you know, that goes into it. I always knew that I would at some point get to the place that I would say the who, and that it was my father. I didn't know, you know, when that would be or how it would be. I knew it wasn't going to be planned, but I knew that that it would just happen, and I was okay with that whenever it did. And for whatever reason, God orchestrated that it was tonight. And on this call and in this forum, and obviously I believe that was for a very specific reason, because people do need to hear the full story, and people also need to understand that as difficult and as dark as Roberta was talking, as dark as these situations can be for us as we're walking them through them, there can be light. And I think that's the biggest thing that I try to communicate whenever I share my story, that there really can be some light after all the dark. And that is the, as crazy as it sounds, the beauty that I see from all of this for me is that I get to look back at all of my dark and ugly days and the hurt and the confusion and all the things, and know that what I experienced wasn't so much about me, but it was about what I'm now able to do and how I'm now able to help other people. And that is at times overwhelming, but it is the gift. And I most definitely, I would not have written the chapter of my life this way. I definitely would have written it differently. You know, chapter 14 and 15 of my life and all of those other years most definitely would have been different. But because I didn't get to write those chapters, I can look back and use them to help folks who are still really, really struggling, because I know that pain, I know that difficulty, and I know that darkness, but I also know the other side, and I also know the light, and that's ultimately what I love to do, what I enjoy doing, what I believe God has blessed me and gifted me to be able to do.
Absolutely. You have a certain calmness to your voice as well. That's very comforting. Maybe you've been told that before by people that know you or the people that you work with. But I think, too, that it just I can't speak because it was my father that sexually abused me. I experienced other forms of maltreatment and trauma that wasn't sexual abuse. But that's all that I know in terms of actually being able to pull out and disclose that happened. But I don't wish to minimize anyone who was sexually abused by, you know, a different family member or by someone they knew, because oh, that the majority of sexual abuse for children happens with someone that they know. But my own experience is that how we're tribal by nature, I think it feels like such a betrayal to disclose, right? To that your own father was the one who sexually abused you. And I was actually going down the tunnel and I was trying to visualize you, this 14-year-old in a small town with all of this extended family. So, and I can't imagine, you couldn't go anywhere without seeing a member of your family, and you're carrying you know, and you're carrying this, and you're having to put on this facade, but you're carrying it so hot, such a heavy thing to carry, as we know. And I'm thinking about you, but also there's this, I still feel, you know, even though I've been public about it, and I came out, I told the world the first time I came on the NASA show in 2019. And I have questions. You know, my father passed away, but I have questions, you know. I said it was my father, and there was this It was, you know, I struggled with that. But I think at the end of the day, what kept me awake at night was, were there any other victims?
Mm-hmm.
How can I not, right? How can I, if I keep it a secret, if we keep, you know, the secrecy is the most prolific enabler of the cycle of abuse to be continued. So I think every time we can.
Absolutely.
You know, but I can also, I'm saying this because I can relate to how difficult it is to actually name the person who sexually abused you. And I think for those that are listening, you know, this is, I wasn't able to admit it to myself until I was 48 years old. So it took me that long. I'd never forgotten it. I think there are a lot of as you know, because you're the professional, of us walking around in the world that remember, but you know, for whatever reason, and I think one of it is the shame of it being, you know, you're
mm-hmm.
someone that you
mm-hmm.
used to work for or your father, that we just cannot put it out there. So I think what you did tonight is such a gift and so brave, because some people listening are going to be inspired by that. And it may, you know, they may be able to come forward earlier.
Yeah.
Thank you. So I you know, we have 33 minutes left, and I want, you know, this is your
show. How did
show.
That happen? Where did...
I don't know. I know, right? So, and this is your show, and I know you've done so much work, not only, you know, personally in your own healing journey, but also the work that you do in the world, your accomplishments and your website and your book, your Survivor's Toolkit. So I want to, you know, hand it back over to you, and I just want you to have enough time to share with us what you wish to share with us. So not to be too broad, but I also don't want to short the time for you not, you know, I want you to be able to share what you wish to share.
Sure. Well, I am, as you said, I've worked in mental health for over 25 years now. And, you know, starting out, obviously, you know, you do everything. You don't really know what your specialty is. But I've always known that I had a heart for those who were hurting this particular way, you know, obviously, because that's where my hurt had been and was certainly during those early years of my career. But I realized that my lane, where I would just kind of hang my hat, was really with grief and trauma, and trauma specific to childhood sexual abuse. And again, because, and even more so, I even kind of went a little deeper, and I work, I won't say exclusively, but I work primarily with African-American women who were survivors of childhood sexual abuse. And I do that because there is, as a little earlier, you know, there is this idea, and I know that happens in other cultures, but because I am in the African-American community, I am intimately familiar with this whole idea of what happens in this house stays in this house. You don't tell anybody. We're going to pray about it, and that's it. And I have seen up close and personal, and obviously know firsthand, the damage that happens as a result of those very dogmatic approaches and those beliefs that we carry. And the reality is that there are countless numbers of women, and in particular African-American women in my case, who are walking around who have never uttered a syllable about the things that they experienced as a child. And the problem with that is that carries over into how they mother, that carries over into how they engage in relationships, that carries over into how they engage with in intimate relationships and marriage, and so it literally impacts every corner of our lives when we don't find the healing, when we aren't able to find that safe space and that safe space and that safe community to be able to just let go and say, this is what happened to me. And I talk a lot about being able to share your story. And for everyone, sharing your story doesn't look like what it looks like for me. As I mentioned earlier, for me, I know that God has put me in a bit of a different spot to be on stages and to do keynotes and to do workshops and all of those things on a bit of a different level when I talk about sharing my story. For everybody, that's not it. For the vast majority, it's about just being able to tell, you know, your best friend, or it's about just being able to tell your husband, sweetie, this is really why I cringe when you kiss me on the back of my neck. It's those kinds of things. When he may think, oh, she, you know, you just don't like that. No, it's deeper than I just don't like it. It's because this happened to me when I was a child. And so because I know and I see and I recognize how it colors literally every layer of our lives, it's so important to me to give women the tools and the space and the community and the safety to, first of all, be able to say it, to get it out in the universe, to get it out of their own heads, because we carry so much for so long. And there are so many times that we start to question, okay, wait a minute, did it happen? Like, okay, was that, am I sure? And so being able to get it out of our own heads and out of our own bodies is so important to beginning the healing journey. And then all of the things that we do, you know, from that point on to begin to take back control and to begin to understand how the abuse colored us, how it changed us, how it impacted us, how it literally does change, you know, affect our bodies, how it does change our response system, and all of those things is why I am so passionate about the work that I do and why I enjoy it so much. you brought up a point just a moment ago that the reality is, you know, when we're raising our children, we all, you know, we talk about stranger danger. The reality is that the vast majority, and I want to say statistics say right about 25%, or I'm sorry, more than 25% of children who are abused, they know who the abuser is. It's not, you know, some guy lurking around a back corner, you know, or coming from behind a tree. It is someone that they know. So that adds another layer to it as well. So again, those are just the things that kind of get my juices going and really get me pumped about this work. And I have written the Survivor's Toolkit, and it really is just it's a short, just a quick tip for people that I say who are just looking for sometimes a starting point, for some people who just kind of need a reminder of things. And it starts, honestly, with self-care, because I think that is the biggest piece to this puzzle. And, you know, I know we're living now in a time where self-care is such a kind of cliche thing, but I talk about it in terms of really, really taking care of yourself on a number of levels, you know, be it physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually as well, so that you can do the work to be whoever you want to be as a woman, as an adult now, no longer as that, you know, 5-year-old, 7-year-old, 14-year-old, you know, 16-year-old girl, but as a fully functioning adult now, and being able to heal from those things. And so we talk about forgiving, forgiveness, but in terms of forgiving yourself, because what we know, those of us who are survivors know, is that we, you know, all the time about forgive, 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 and typically that's pointed at the abuser. And quite frankly, I think that's a story for a different day. But I talk about being able to forgive yourself for some of those things that you may have done that we might term, you know, maladaptive coping skills, you know, we'll say it as mental health professionals. But the reality is they're just coping skills. Because none of us have the capacity as a child to know what to do when you've been abused. We're not equipped. Our brains haven't fully functioned. They haven't completely finished growing the way that they need to. So we don't have the capacity to understand what happened. And so we cope in the best way that we can. And sometimes those are things that are not best for us in the long run, but they serve us during that time. And so we have to learn to forgive ourselves for things that maybe it was, you know, drugs, maybe it was alcohol, maybe it was promiscuity, maybe, you know, maybe it was, you know, different relationships, all of those, whatever it was. But forgiving ourselves and understanding that however we chose to cope during that time was just that. It was our ability to figure out, how do I live another day in the midst of what is happening to me or what has happened to me, and not having the safety and not having the capacity, rather, to make sense of that as a child. I talk about that, and then just some very practical things that I think are important. You know, journaling. I talk a lot about prayer and meditation, and then obviously using grounding and those techniques to help when we know when those triggers come, and when we have those flashbacks and we have difficulty sleeping, and all of those sorts of things. So that's really what the toolkit is. Just give some really quick, but I think very important tips to get survivors started, and then also sometimes to remind survivors who've been on the journey for a long time, who may have fallen, you know, back a little bit and may be having some difficulty for a different reason at different seasons of life, give them some tools that they can use. So I hope that was helpful. I know that was a lot, but I hope that was helpful.
It's absolutely helpful, because I think I always called it, like, I refer to myself as, I've got to go back to the basics, right? Go back to the beginning, right? Because I do think sometimes that we, you know, we're humming along, and then I'll start, you know, maybe I'll start having flashbacks again, or I'll have some mm-hmm. triggers, and I'll, more triggers than usual, and I'll think, well, you know, I won't realize why. And usually it is something because I'm not doing some sort of self-care or something, but mm-hmm. I'll have to try to go back to the beginning and think, okay, you know, let's get to a grassroots level here and figure out what's going on. So it makes really, really good sense. And I think that's part of the journey too, is kind of the checking back in. I call it checking back in as well. That's another term mm-hmm. that I use.
Exactly.
So I want to let everybody know, not only our panel members, but for those who are listening. So Catherine Barner has a website, and it's called, I love it. So your website is krbu.square.site. Is that right?
So here's the best way to get to me, katherinebarner.org, and then that will get you to all the other stuff. Yeah.
I guess I'm on the apparel. Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay. Oh, no, that's fine. No, that's fine.
Yep. You have the cutest clothes and all of your pictures, too. So I know you're on LinkedIn as well under Catherine Barner, but it is so yeah, so it's, go back to the website, Catherine Barner, which is Catherine with a K, so KATHERINEBARNER.org. And
exactly.
Meet Catherine. She talks about her counseling, her coaching, speaking, if you'd like her to speak, or MC. She has a store with some of the cutest hoodies and tees, a way to contact her. It also gives a hyperlink to her book, The Survivor's Toolkit, which she mentioned, which I think is a wonderful tool. I took a look at that as well, and you can get it right to your phone.
Yes, you should be able to download that, right to the phone.
Download it right to the phone. So you always have it with you, which I think is great, especially if you're traveling. You don't want to carry a book with you. It's on your phone. So she's also on Facebook. I did find you on Facebook. So if you see a Penelope Bennis, find a friend you. That would be me, unless you know a couple other Penelopes who are going to be friending you in the next 24 hours. But lots of wonderful ways to get in touch with Catherine. And we have 20 minutes left, so I do want to give our panel another opportunity to interact with you, if that's all right with you, Catherine.
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you. So I'd like to invite Kim. I'd like to invite you back on with Catherine.
Hey, thank you, Penelope. Hi, Catherine.
Hey. Hi.
I just friend requested you as well on Facebook, and I noticed that we do have at least one friend in common, and that's Donna Skell. So I should have known that you are a speaker and that you live in Texas, that you would know of her.
I love it.
So tell me about your interaction with her. Were you in one of her books?
So I am probably, let me think, 4 or 5 years ago, with an organization, Christian Women in Media Association, which is in Dallas. And so she was actually, is still, I believe, a part of that. And so we connected through that organization. And just think she's just a phenomenal individual. But the work that she does in helping people share their stories and through the books that they write, I think it's just an amazing process that they take people through in order to be able to do that. I have not been in one of those books, but I do know the work. I have a couple of friends who have been and know the work that she does. So just a really, really cool person, really great work that they do in Dallas. So. That is so funny.
I was very honored.
People away.
Oh yeah. I was honored to be in one of her books. And,
oh nice.
I was in volume 5, and she kind of took me under her wing, and then I told her I keep writing, and I haven't continued. So hopefully I get back to it. But yeah, I just would, look forward to connecting with you more, and thank you for, so much of your story and doing the work that you're doing. It took me 50 years to start talking about my story, and I think it might have also been on this podcast that I shared my story as well to the fullest with using my dad. And so... thank you for your vulnerability and just letting us be here for you. And it means a lot. So thank you.
I appreciate that so much, Kim.
I don't want to take up a lot of time. I want you to just hear more about your story, and I will connect with you in a while here.
That sounds like a plan.
I don't have
that
a lot of
That sounds
time.
Like a plan.
Thank you, Kathy.
So I'm going to bring Nancy, our NASA sister Nancy from Virginia, back on the line. Nancy, you're back on with Catherine.
Hi, Miss Catherine.
Hey,
so good
Nancy.
To have you tonight again. I just remember you saying that you're sharing that gift of telling the truth and being honest, and it truly is a gift that you're giving, because you're helping to save lives ultimately, and you're helping those that are trying to find their way back. You're holding their hand back right to the light, back to that hope of being able to heal and working towards taking the first step, and just creating a base where people could come back and remember, like, okay, this is the step. Let's, sometimes when we're in the healing journey, we mess up. We fall down, we fail along the way. We might fall back into old habits, bad patterns. Like you said, you develop these coping mechanisms, but creating steps to help people get back. And because I've been working on my healing journey, my healing book, with my story, just focusing really on how I healed and some of the tools that I've learned along the way. But people need that. They need that right now. They're feeling alone, especially with everything going on. People are isolated. And when you're by yourself again, that's when the enemy really gets a chance to put negative thoughts in your mind. So I just want to thank you for the work that you're doing. Please continue to do it. And pretty much it. Also the importance of self-care. A lot of times we neglect ourselves. We're giving, especially people that have been through abuse. We have a tendency to give or to want to help or to want to, we're a lot of us are in the service industry. So So mm-hmm. you have to remember to take care of yourself and, you know, pour in your cup so that you can pour in others, in others' cup as well. About it.
Thank you. I'm so glad you said that, Nancy. I mean, it's interesting you bring that up because that's actually something that even recently I've had to remind myself to do, is to take care of me. I usually do a pretty good job of it, you know, but as you said, you know, life happens to all of us, you know, outside of the abuse, you know, family members die and, you know, children are acting, you know, like they were raised by a pack of wolves always. They, you know, think things come up in
right.
life. And so there are times when we forget that we've got to take a step back and refill our own cups and get to a place where we're doing that consistently so that when those things happen, we aren't so completely depleted. And so I appreciate you bringing that up because it is so vitally important for us to be always doing that.
Right.
Absolutely. I can totally relate to that. Well, thank you, Nancy. Thank you so much. I'm going to put you back on mute if that's okay, if you didn't have any more questions.
Yes, thank
for Catherine.
You.
Okay. And I'm going to... Oops, sorry. Did I just...
Thank
did
you
I
so much,
again?
Ms. Catherine.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I'm going to unmute Roberta's line. So, Roberta, you are back on with Catherine. Did you have any more questions or comments for Catherine regarding what she has shared with us?
Well, Catherine, I was just listening and I was just thinking about a lot of things that you were talking about in my life. And, you know, it's something definitely I'll be saving to realize. Well, first of all, what you're just saying about, you know, take care of yourself. And I've never allowed myself to, I've never been in a place where I could feel safe enough to do things.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, now I'm pretty much in a safe place. I don't know, but I just wanted to ask, after you talked to the people whenever you first started your, well, I don't know. There's a couple of questions I want. I'm just kind of like in a daze right now. I'm going through this post-traumatic stress and anxiety right now, so I better just be quiet and listen. But I just want to thank you for talking.
Thank you, Roberta. Thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you, Roberta. Well, you know, one burning question I did have for you, Catherine, was, you
mm-hmm.
know, if you wouldn't mind just describing to us, you know, how you started your healing journey and what those healing modalities looked like.
That is a great question. I was thrust into this journey. As I said, for me, things, it was just prior to my first marriage is when I began having just some really significant, like I said, nightmares and dreams and all the things and didn't know what the heck was going on with me. But it was all centered around, obviously, the wedding and, you know, a father needing to give you away. So how do you do that when you don't want him to, but you can't have him not give you away because then you have to explain why he's not walking down the aisle, like all the things and what started me down that cycle. And so it started with counseling for me. I had to get into counseling. And then from there, that took me probably another, I would say, you know, 7 to 10 years. And then, you know, begin having some other not so significant issues in my life, but then going back to counseling. So for me, the biggest thing for me has been connecting with a therapist who understands trauma. And oftentimes when I talk to survivors, I always want to say that connecting with a therapist who understands the impact of trauma and who is trauma informed, because it does look very different when you're talking about these things that have happened as a child. So counseling and therapy has been my go-to. I mean, like I said, it didn't start until I was about 24. which at that point was 10 years post the abuse. But that has been my go-to. And then since then, I love to journal. As I've mentioned, my spirituality, my faith has been a huge part for me. I have a small group of people who do and did know my story that I can just be with, if that makes sense, just kind of let go, and that I am blessed to be safe with. Like I said, it's only a handful, like literally maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but those people are very near and dear to me. So those things have been key for me. I've done all of the grounding work. I do a lot of EMDR with clients. I have not done that individually myself when we start talking about like specific techniques and that sort of thing, but I do a lot of grounding work myself. I do a lot of relaxation. I do a lot of deep breathing. I do a lot of the 5-4-3-2-1 technique, in times when I've been really, really triggered. And so now for me, it's just a matter of maintaining. So I enjoy yoga. I enjoy dancing. I do a lot as far as moving my body, that keeps me connected to my senses and making sure that I'm always aware of where I am mentally and emotionally when things may start to be turning a little bit of a corner for me. And I'm much better now at recognizing that before it happens than I have been in the past. But it's because I've used all of those different techniques, and continually checking in with a therapist, and uncovering and unearthing, quite honestly, some of the things that I really didn't want to do. Right now, specifically, the work for me is centered around my mother. My mother and I were extremely close. I mean, she was my everything. And so knowing my story, but hearing that, there can be a disconnect. And so for me, there has been that. And so now I'm, working through just making sure that I'm in a good place and a good space with that. So it all started with counseling and therapy for me. And then everything else, all the tentacles then that come from that are the things that I use to maintain, and that allow me, quite honestly, to be able to do the work that I do. Because I couldn't do it if I were not in a good place, in a safe space. I wouldn't be able then to engage in the work with anyone else. So I hope that answered the question.
Oh, it absolutely does for me, absolutely does. And one thing that I actually sort of, you said earlier too, was in working with women, it's not only what's going on, with your mind, but also, does our mind remember? And do we want to speak about it? But if we don't remember, if we don't want to speak, our body reminds us. I mean, the effects, right? If I, my mm-hmm. mind didn't want to remember, my body did. Yeah, and I think exactly. And so I think what you described too, really a mind, body, spirit approach mm-hmm. to your healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd once read many years ago when I was in the beginning of my healing journey, that a soul injury is what they called childhood sexual abuse, really need to be, in their opinion, to be addressed mind, body, and soul. And I didn't really know, or mind, body, and spirit. And I didn't really know what that meant until my healing modalities included that as well. And so, cognitive, talk therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, it also, for me, it was trauma-informed yoga, meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mentioned, very spiritual, and luckily I found a trauma-informed, trained therapist that was also a ordained priest. So for me, that did help. But thank you for sharing that, because I think, and I know that when Roberta had come on, and talking about, different things that you can try, or different modalities that you can go to try and start
mm-hmm.
or maintain or continue, that is really helpful. So thank you so much. And it does make
you're
sense.
Welcome.
And actually what you also just said about, and see that I understand, when you have a close relationship with your mother, that bond, right? But also being able to speak some of your truth. That is for me, and I think what I heard you just say is that can be a process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is, and it can be. And for me, you know, specifically, it's very recent, as I said, that I've started to uncover that part, because for so very long, you know, the focus is always on, you know, the one who abused you and the offender and the one, all of that. And I never really dealt with or delved into, and quite frankly, didn't believe that there was anything to deal with as it related to my mother. Until recently, I experienced a significant loss of another loved one that kind of unearthed with, you know, the things with my mom. And so it's interesting how we experience certain losses or certain events that will take us to different places with the abuse and the trauma that we may have thought either, you know, were not that big of a deal, or we just weren't aware of at all. And but that's mm-hmm. all a part of that healing journey, and that it does happen in stages and phases. And mm-hmm. it's okay. It's not a one shot fit all kind of approach. And so that's a lot of what I talk about, you know, again, with the women I work with, and then, you know, with the Sister Speak Up, you know, the membership society and all that stuff. We dig into all of that to help people understand that if things come back for you after you've done the counseling and you're using your tools, that doesn't mean it didn't work, and it doesn't mean you're broken again. It just means that you're in a different phase. And so, okay, we grab another tool in our tool belt, or maybe we use our tool differently for this particular phase of the journey.
Absolutely. And sometimes I feel like, well, the journey, you're going around different bends as you know, address one thing or down one road, and, you know, you go around a different bend and something else comes up, and maybe that's just part of progressing forward. That's what I think is, mm-hmm. as you progress forward, you come up, to different things.
Totally agree.
And they're not, and I don't think it gets easier. It just gets different, right?
Exactly. I think there are phases where it can be a little easier, only because you've done something a little bit similar before, but I agree, it's just different.
Yeah. So we have 2 minutes left, so I just want to give you, you know, the last minute if you want to, and not to be on the spot, but if you want to, you know, leave our panel and our listeners with if any last words or anything you want people to take away with them, and open for you to share that right now.
Sure. I think that the biggest thing that I would say to our panel and to our list is that there really can be a light after all of the difficult and dark and hurtful places that we've all experienced. There really can be a light. And sometimes, you know, it starts with just a glimmer. But that glimmer really can turn into a larger light that can help you move to a place of healing that is safe, where you can be protected, where you can experience the life that you want to create for yourself, and then be able to experience that life with the people that you love and care about. So I think that is the biggest thing that I would really like to leave with people. And then obviously, again, I am just so grateful to have had the opportunity to not only share my story, but to just be in connection with all of you who are listening now and who will listen to this at some point, because there really, again, I do believe there's healing, and there's really just something about being in a safe space with people who may not know the specifics of your story, but just knowing that you experienced something, they get it in a way that many, many other people don't. And that can be very freeing and very honoring for yourself as well. So, and I am grateful for this opportunity, and I thank you all so much just for having me and for engaging with me in this way.
Oh, Catherine, we thank you. Thank you. What a pleasure and privilege it's been to meet you this evening, truly, and I really hope we keep in touch. And with that being said, it is the time that's up. It goes by so quickly, and so I wish to thank our very special guest, Catherine Barner, this evening for coming on, my co-host Kim Lakin. and our NAFTA sisters, Ambassador Nancy Brown from West Virginia and Roberta from Oklahoma. Thank you so much for being on. And as I always say at the close of the show, it is all of our responsibility as adults. And there are enough adult eyes on this planet to keep every single child safe. If you see something, please say something. It is our moral responsibility to do so. Thank you and good night.
Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.